That's South Africa's Winston Mankunku Ngozi with a nifty little tune called Dedication. This was written when he was 24 years old. It's amazing the sophistication of his music at that young age. It's from his 1968 album, Yakal Inkomo, created during the days of apartheid in South Africa. The title refers to the bellow of a bull as it is taken to slaughter. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and a very interesting program, I hope you would agree, today. Hillary Clinton is back and ready for a fight. Months after her devastating loss to Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential election that forced her into retreat, a refreshed, newly coiffed Hillary Clinton keynoted the annual conference in San Francisco of the Professional Businesswomen of California. Her speech centered on increasing the presence and power of women in all forms of governance and in all forms of life, all ways of life. But it is clear that she was sending a message about her political future. So we're going to listen to an excerpt of her speech. It was a pretty long speech, actually. I hope she got paid really well for it. It was a pretty long speech. But let's decode a small piece of that speech, and we will get some clues as to where Hillary is headed and what she's saying. So let's take a listen.
But I am here today to urge us not to grow tired, not to be discouraged and disappointed, not to throw up our hands because change isn't happening fast enough, or to even take a pass because we think we've done our part. We need more women at any table, on any conference call or email chain where decisions are made. And a big part of that is encouraging more women to run for office and pushing the private sector to do a lot better than it currently is. But even that's not enough. We can't stop there. We need to reset the table. So women are no longer required to accept or adapt to discrimination and sexism at work. We need to think beyond corporate boardrooms, beyond the corridors of companies or elected bodies, beyond our own lives and experiences, to lift up women of all incomes, industries, and backgrounds in every corner of our country. And a crucial part of solving these problems is recognizing that, as important as it is, corporate feminism is no substitute for inclusive, concrete solutions that improve life for women everywhere. Because as challenging as it is to climb the career ladder, it's even harder for women at the margins, unable to get on or stay on even the lowest rung. And for too many women, especially low-wage workers, basic things like a livable wage or predictable work schedules or affordable childcare are still way out of reach. We know from decades of data that encouraging women's full participation is both right and smart. This data comes not just from our own country, but from across the world. When I was Secretary of State, I made it part of my mission to try to educate governments that including women in the economy was not only good for them and their families, but poverty went down and gross domestic product of the entire country went up. And companies with more women in upper management do achieve higher profits. Yet we also know, many of us from our own lives, that women still face barriers that hold us back. I meet talented women everywhere I go who are squeezing every minute out of their 24-hour day. They love their jobs, but they can't escape the nagging feeling that it's a lot harder than it should be to get ahead. I bet just about everyone in this room has had the experience of saying something in a meeting that gets ignored. 10, 20 minutes later, a man says the same thing and everybody thinks it's genius. And I think we should pool our respective reactions so that you have right at your fingertips exactly what to say. Nice thought. A little slow on the uptake, but good idea. And where everyday sexism and structural barriers were once blatant, today they're sometimes harder to spot, but make no mistake, they're still with us. Just look at all that's happened in the last few days to women who were simply doing their jobs. April Ryan, a respected journalist with unrivaled integrity, was doing her job just this afternoon in the White House press room when she was patronized and cut off trying to ask a question. One of your own California congresswomen, Maxine Waters, was taunted with a racist joke about her hair. Now, too many women, especially women of color, have had a lifetime of practice taking precisely these kinds of indignities in stride. But why should we have to? And any woman who thinks this couldn't be directed at her is living in a dream world. I mean, it's not like I didn't know all the nasty things they were saying about me. Some of them were actually quite creative, ones I hadn't heard before. But you just have to keep going. And even when
Hillary Clinton addressing in California just 2 days ago, in San Francisco, the Professional Business Women of California Conference, annual conference. Now, that is no ordinary speech. It sounds, you know, substantive and so forth. But when, as we know what to do here, when we listen to a speech, you listen to the various levels of meaning. And I'm going to ask you now, based on what you just heard, and that was just a small snippet of this very long speech, but what is Hillary Clinton doing here? What is she doing? 888-874-4888. This is very significant, a very significant speech. She's not making any announcements, and yet she's making announcements. She's being very targeted, and there are many reasons why this speech, even the small snippet that we just listened to, has great significance. It's telling us something. What is it telling us? What could you say is the motive here and the purpose of the speech? She declared at the very beginning what she's there to do. She's telling the audience, I am here to encourage you to look, take the long view. I'm here to kind of bolster and encourage you to just persevere. But there is a whole other layer, several layers of meaning in this speech. And I wondered whether you picked up on the clues here. You know, in the same way that we understand Donald Trump And we understand Donald Trump because we took the time to understand, to get a sense, a profile, to put together a profile of this man, how he thinks, how he operates, and what he's likely to do. So even though it is boggling people's minds, we remain calm because nothing that Donald Trump has done so far is startling. Not if you understand where the man is coming from. Patricia from New York, what did this little glimpse of into the speech, what did it tell you?
Well, first of all, good afternoon, Utrice. Good afternoon
Hello.
To the PRN family.
Thank you. I really appreciate it when you salute the family. That's really wonderful. Thank you.
I have to start off by saying you are just too smart for your own good. Because the one thing I was hoping you were going to have call-ins today, because I just finished receiving an invitation to attend and participate in the Women in the World Summit. What the portion that you just aired is part of a three she's doing across the country speeches to women. And so San Francisco was one. She'll be in New York next week for the Women in the World Summit. And so
we are constantly ahead of the game, aren't we?
And, you know, so I went and I printed out all the information, because there's so much information in the website. And this Women of the World Summit, the goal is to present powerful new female role models whose personal stories, you know, illuminate the most pressing international issues. And then when you look at the list of participants, these are the participants. Scarlett Johansson, the actress. Lena Dunham. They're going to have supporters of women's issues. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Diane von Furstenberg, and Arianna Huffington. And I'm looking for the women of color to be represented here. She has two African women, but I don't see not one African American. There's no Latina woman on here. Not one. And I don't see an American African American. And so what this says to me is her conversation has nothing to do with women, with people of color, because we are not even on the list of participants. Her platform is now women. She's gonna start appealing to women, and that don't include women.
All right, you get 10 points already.
And so, I, you know, all I can do is shake my head, because that's where she's going. And so she's gonna drag in the women of color, however, because I remember when I was speaking to my friends, during the run up to the election last year, and all my friends were talking about, oh, but she's a woman and she's gonna do this. And I said to them, well, wait a minute now. So if her concern is, I don't see any Palestinian women on here. So keep in mind.
Do they exist, really?
I think Palestinian women exist. Last I looked. So I wanted to impress upon my friends, think globally. What she thinks about them is what she thinks about you. But keep in mind, she will use you for her own personal ends under the guise of women, that tenth categorization of women. And you think she's talking about you, but she's not.
Well, excellent point. A great point to start out with. Hillary Clinton is in the process of recreating her political self. And there is a void. Her loss was the loss of the Democratic Party. She doesn't have time. She doesn't want to reinvest in building the Democratic Party. She caused it, in fact, to collapse in large measure. So there is a huge political void. If you listen to this, just a small piece of the speech, she has stolen or commandeered the language of Bernie Sanders. She's talking about childcare and a living wage, and all, she's managed to incorporate all of that in that small space. And she's talking strictly to women, but not. She chooses, and it's very, very subtle, and you're absolutely correct about that. She's not talking to all women here. But she referenced women of color by, how did she reference women of color? Do you recall from the speech?
Yes, by talking about Maxine Waters' hair and the journalist who was rebuffed by Spicer the other day.
April Ryan. Yes. That's what she references them.
Yes.
But she, to basically say she is universal in her appeal to women. So she just references them, but she is talking to an audience of predominantly white women in California, the Silicon Valley area type women in California.
And that's who she's going to be talking to in New York next week.
There's not a preponderance of people of color in that audience. But the point that we should keep in mind is this being her first major speech since the election, she has already indicated what her next step will be, and we can expect it to be a specific appeal to women. You get 10 out of 10 today, and you get us an extra point or two for getting us started the right way. Thanks so much, Patricia, for your call.
Thank you.
Lalita from New York City, you're on the air.
Therese, how are you?
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, you, Therese.
Hello.
Hi there. I'm so grateful for the previous caller because she kind of set me up. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Hillary Clinton is talking about women as though she represents all of us. Now, I grew up in a time when women didn't go out to work so much, and women generally were at home a lot, raising their own children. Now, the problem with people like Hillary Clinton, so far as I see it, is that they represent a kind of feminism that has nothing to do with all women. It is, as you've pointed out, largely to do with Caucasian women and corporate feminists, as I think she referred to.
She actually uses that phrase, corporate feminism. Yes.
Right. And the problem with that entire movement from its inception is that it completely negated the critically vital, important social role of women as mothers. So then when you have Hillary Clinton, you hear her talk about affordable childcare.
Yes.
Who's she talking to? Because so far as I can see, and I am a woman of color, so far as I've seen throughout my life, the women who've done the child caring have been women of color who've not had the privilege, the opportunity of raising their own children, but have had to take substandard wages and suffer substandard treatment, taking care of other people's children, who are usually a different color, a different ethnicity. And this has been completely omitted from our conversation about women and the role of women today and going forward.
This is the strategic reference she made, and she just yanked out of the political playbook of Bernie Sanders and other people, but particularly Bernie Sanders, the platforms and also of Jill Stein. She yanked all the a couple of very critical reference points out of their political manuals and kind of put it in the speech to say that she too shares these views about the need for child care and for a living wage and so forth, so that the speech sounds balanced. But really,
right,
what she is sending is she's basically reciting early a platform, her political platform, when she fully stretches out in her next political life.
And that platform has never included and probably won't include women who choose to be mothers, because I really believe that if we were taking better care of our children, and women are the best people to take care of their children, I know that sounds outdated, but I will hold that belief till the day I die. Women are the best people to take care of their children. We will have a healthier, more functional society. We'll have fewer people on drugs, fewer people who need or feel they need to take opioids, et cetera, et cetera. Healthier, happier people. And that starts in the home, and it starts with mothering. And until we start respecting mothers again, politically, socially, economically, why not divert some of the tax dollars that corporations don't pay into supporting parents who want to raise their own children? How wonderful would that be? Let's support mothers to raise their own children.
Well, you raised some excellent points, but you also gave us a clue from your own perspective from this speech. And we only listened to 5 minutes of it. But there's a lot that was said, even by inference in this speech, that we need to pay attention to, because whether Hillary Clinton is aware of it or not, she's giving away several layers of meaning to what she is saying, and we catching up on it, aren't we? Thank you so much,
yes,
Lalita.
We are.
Great
Thank
to
you,
hear
you
from you.
Thank you.
Judy,
thank you,
from New York, you're on the air. Judy?
Hello?
You're on the air.
Yep. Hi, good afternoon, Yatrice, and good afternoon to the audience.
Thank you so much for that. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. I agree with the previous two callers wholeheartedly on their point. But the thing that stuck out to me is when I hear her speaking, politically, it's almost like an unstated thing that the parties, the two parties don't have to appease the black community in any way, shape, or form. They know we're going to gain support regardless. So I thought it was very interesting when she mentioned Maxine Waters and the other reporter. I apologize, I don't recall her name right now, but it's almost as
That's April Ryan.
Thank you.
April Ryan, yes.
So it's almost as if, without saying it in so many words, but I'm relating to you. So it's like I identify with whatever you identify with. So merely mentioning their names and stating how, you know, well, they were disrespected and, you know, they were signs of racism. That's it's almost like she's cueing in. Like, beyond that, I'm not doing anything else for the black community, for the black women, but I'm just going to say this, and that alone is sufficient for me to almost guarantee that I'm going to have your backing and I'm going to have your support.
I should note here that mentioning of these two names did not go unnoticed, because Maxine Waters herself said in responding to on Fox 5, the guy who made fun of her hair. I forget his name because he's just not in my mind at all, O'Brien. And she said, this is Maxine Waters, she made it a point to say on the floor, and Hillary Clinton supports black women.
Yeah.
She said it. So immediately you can see how this speech in San Francisco resonated. And people got the silent, you know, it was a dog whistle kind of speech. They got it. They heard the whistle. But she is cultivating her new political base because I guess she assumes that she has enough clout in the black and Latino community.
Right.
So she doesn't have to work that hard to win them over. And so she's working now on the broader base of white women. And that speech was a signal, and people got it, that she is going to be stressing. She is slipping into this vacuum that has been created by the demise of the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders is talking, but he doesn't have a vehicle. The Green Party is not in action, so it's wide open. And she has had a long presence in the political realm. So she's going after this, and she's creating this as her focus, women. Women will be her focus. Very, very interesting. Thank you so much for your call. Dwight from Newark, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, you Therese.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, and yourself? And I would like to say that I hope the PRN listening audience is doing well also.
Thank you so much.
You Therese, my point today, it kind of goes along with what we're talking about today. Now, Monday on Dr. Ron Daniels' show, he was celebrating Women in Black History Month, and he had a guest. He had several guests on, but one was ex-judge Laura Blackburn. And when Laura Blackburn was on, she spoke, and she out and out, right, with no punches pulled, blamed Hillary Clinton's defeat on black people. Now, when she said that, I thought that that was an unusual thing to say. And it harkened me back to one of your earlier shows where the both parties, especially Democratic Party, whenever something's broken, they depend on the black and brown bodies to fix it. And I just thought it was kind of amazing for a black woman to come out and after such a crushing defeat of Hillary Clinton to come out so squarely just this week, this is Monday's show, and blame Hillary Clinton's loss on black people for coming out to vote. And the reason that she gave for it was because Barack Obama wasn't running for a third term. Now, connecting that to Hillary Clinton's speech, Hillary Clinton is in shape-shifting mode. There has only been...
What kind of mode is that?
Shape-shifting mode. Now, what I mean by that, Utrice, is she's willing to become anything that she needs to become relevant again. Because we have been wondering for the longest on your show, we kind of asked... we talked about the void of leadership in the Democratic Party, and we also asked the question, where is Hillary Clinton? So now, on yesterday's show, all of a sudden, Jesse Jackson comes out the woodwork.
But and I talked about Jesse just yesterday, didn't I?
Exactly. That's why I'm bringing him up. He has all of a sudden come out of the woodwork, and now Hillary Clinton's come out of the woodwork. So she's kind of answered the question, where has she been and what has she been doing? She's been planning this, I'm a whole different person now than I was before. She's jumping on. Now, the most successful movement that we have had since Donald Trump has been president was the day after the inauguration, was the women's movement worldwide. It was unbelievable when you looked at the aerial views of photography of these marches that happened all over the world. Now, why, since we talked about the void of leadership, why not Hillary Clinton come down and pounce on that and gain that momentum and make that women's movement hers? Now, we talked about the Democratic Party not having very much as far as organization, as far as galvanizing all the women together, as far as mobilization with the women's movement. We basically gave that credit to the people themselves, you know. So it was unbridled people power, not motivated by the Democratic Party. So now Hillary Clinton is just going to come out. As you said, she's stealing lines from Bernie Sanders. She's trying to make herself over. And it sounded to me like a campaign speech yesterday.
Well, of course it is a campaign speech. But under the guise that she's addressing a professional women's organization, This is how they do it. But I'm saying for us, we got the first signal yesterday. And we better pay attention. And if we pay attention, we will be able to predict what's coming down. To a certain extent, we'll be able to predict what's next for Hillary Clinton. Because she's actually saying it. I don't think even she's aware that she's saying it.
Only gone for a short period of time, but hello, people, I'm back.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you so much, Dwight, for your call today.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Gino, you're on the air.
Hello, Sister Utrice. I got
Hello.
You both ears here again. Good day. Okay, where to begin? All right. I guess it all starts with, Dr. King's message is still has yet to be understood and listened to. It's the content, the character, not the color of the skin or the if one is a woman or a man. It's the content of character. And it's what we do, not what we say. The other thing is she's in California, and she's talking about freedom. How about did she mention freedom to choose to vaccinate the children or not? Which it's mandatory. The kids get vaccinated out there in the place of the land of the free, home of the brave. So that was an issue I think she avoided in that speech.
Well, she avoided quite a lot. But the main thing is what she did pay attention to is what we're talking about. We're talking about what she presented as the key points of her speech. And the layers of meaning there, and reinterpreting it.
Yes. What I heard her saying was, I've lost and I haven't given up. That's basically, she's speaking on behalf of women. She's projecting from her own self. She's still got sour grapes about losing, and
Absolutely.
She hasn't given up. So basically, also, she didn't mention with the women issue, Libya, toppling of the most advanced country in Africa and all the women who suffered from that when they were the most equal with men in all those states out there.
There's a long list of things she didn't say. And
That's
we're going to get to that in 2 seconds because there's a very interesting connection with her speech, which I want to get to next. But you're absolutely right. Thanks for calling. Yes. Well, I thought about, how small the world is and connecting dots. It's very, very interesting how small the world is. And particularly for this feminist, Hillary Clinton, the mother of modern feminism, it seems, at least this is what she's conveying. Well, Summer Zervos, a former contestant on the Donald Trump reality show, The Apprentice, has filed a lawsuit against the president claiming that he sexually harassed her in 2007 by forcibly kissing her and touching her inappropriately. And guess what? There is a connection here because Trump's lawyers, more specifically, are using the same defense in this sexual harassment lawsuit that one Bill Clinton used as his defense against a sexual harassment lawsuit brought by Paula Jones. You remember that? See how small the world is? The woman who just talked about all this feminism and the right to occupy intellectual space and power and whatnot, who said nothing, really, during that tumultuous time with her husband being accused of sexually harassing and sexually molesting and sexually was taken advantage of a series of women. She said nothing. But what did come out of the Paula Jones lawsuit, which is very, very important to remember, is that it laid the groundwork for Bill Clinton's impeachment. How did it do that? The essential argument here, the argument that Donald Trump is now invoking, this is the Bill Clinton defense, It's so weird how this world works. Donald Trump's lawyers are invoking the Bill Clinton defense. His lawyers are saying that presidents are given way more consideration constitutionally, to the point where they're practically exempt from being sued civilly, that the president is practically immune to civil lawsuits. That's Trump's defense. And that was Bill Clinton's defense. Bill Clinton's defense would have held up had he not been caught in a lie. And what happened was they deposed him. And they asked him, as part of putting together the case, he was under oath as he was questioned. He was asked questions about a series of women who had by then come forward and accused Bill Clinton of sexually harassing them and sexually molesting them. And one of the people he was asked about was Paula Jones. This was, after all, for her case against him. So when they asked Bill Clinton about his sexual history with Paula Jones, he denied it. He denied that they had had a sexual history. Therefore, he lied. Therefore, he perjured himself. And that is how it came to be a huge matter, because Bill Clinton lied under oath. And that is what led to impeachment. Now, I don't know whether it will work the same way with Donald Trump. Bill Clinton might have prevailed in this argument that presidents are shielded from prosecution, if you will, from civil lawsuits, that they enjoy this special privilege. Is Trump going to prevail with that argument? We don't know. But it is interesting that Bill Clinton, of all people, the husband of the great feminist Hillary Clinton, was the one who provided him this legal gift without which he would have no prayer at all. Trump would have no prayer. Right now, that is where things stand. They're not talking about it at all. This case by Summer Zervos, a one-time contestant on The Apprentice. And this case goes back to 2007. Oddly, the case actually was filed just before his inauguration. So this is very much alive and well. And, of course, the question, having heard about the zeal of Hillary Clinton in promoting women's rights and talking about the fact that women are treated so poorly, I thought she would, you know, it is interesting and ironic, isn't it, that here we have two seemingly unrelated cases, and yet her husband literally provided the legal defense for Donald Trump. Small world. Small world. We'll see how that case works out for Donald Trump, but we know how it worked out for Bill Clinton. It resulted in his impeachment because he lied under oath during deposition. You see? Small world. Well, we still have time to take one or two more calls if we have calls coming in. 888-874-4888. Look, you can't write this stuff. You just can't write this stuff. But it's the absolute truth. It is the absolute truth. One president whose wife is a super feminist. She is really, really into women's rights. With a dog of a husband about whom she says nothing. The cases against him, she has nothing to say about those things. In fact, it was shown that, in fact, she went after these women who had made these cases against her husband, Bill Clinton, and she vilified them. She harassed them. She even threatened them. As we heard in their public testimony recently, as the campaign came to an end, and they were telling the truth about what Hillary Clinton did to them. We heard about Bill Clinton's black son that Hillary Clinton basically banished, that Bill Clinton was to have nothing to do with the black son he fathered. And the black grandchildren that he has. Well, I guess, you know, there's a feeling as a wife that kind of clears away all the other obligations you have as an activist. But just the same, it is worth noting that Bill Clinton and his impeachment are directly related to something that is unfolding with this current president trying to move off the table a 2007 sexual harassment complaint, which is a lawsuit now, and he has Bill Clinton to thank for setting a legal argument about immunity, the presidential immunity to civil lawsuits. We'll see how the court interprets that. But so far, I haven't seen a long discussion of this this case or of the so-called presidential privilege and immunity, supposed immunity against civil lawsuits. But it's a very interesting thing. All right. You know, after a while, you just have to say, don't people see how crazy this is? All these people running around being so high and mighty and in a position nonetheless. They're crazy. They're chaotic. They're not at all qualified to lead or rule. And yet, there they are. And we are subject to the decisions that they make, as unqualified as they are to make them. This is the irony of America. So when people tell me about, you know, this reverence they have for Hillary Clinton, I mean, come on. Look at what it is you are elevating. You're elevating this. Maxine Waters stood on the floor of the House, and in her speech, she lifts up Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, she says, supports black women. Was it necessary to note this? But this is how the relationship has been. Black people have been played all over the place. And you'd think by now you'd be a bit more judicious in, you know, passing out these superlatives about people who don't qualify for them, giving blanket support. And as a representative of a community in extreme distress, you ought to be a bit more careful with your mouth. You ought to be a bit more careful about what it is you're saying. Khalil from South Carolina.
Hi, Chief. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Well, it looks like you have a lot on the table today.
It seems like it.
Yeah, this, you know, all these things are related. It seems, I mean, even the things that we talked about earlier in the week, to me, all these, a lot of these things are related. And I'm even thinking about Judge Gorsuch. And the reason I say that is that, you know, a few seconds ago you said we have all these unqualified people, yet there they are. And that's the truth, because when Al Franken was reading the law as it is written in terms of transportation in that congressional hearing, you know, it was clear to me, I'm talking about, I think it's called the Trans America trucking case, where a man had to leave his rig and take the Bobcat, which is the front part of your tractor trailer, and drive that away because it was 14 degrees or more below zero, you know, so he wouldn't freeze to death. Long and short, I don't know if you saw that part when Al Franken basically dissected and broke down why Gorsuch made a terrible decision in that case. But it's about hubris. And some of these folks that we have to call leaders, I guess, by default, are absolutely unqualified and corrupt and disgusting. Now, in that trans, I don't know, it's trans something. It's not really that important. But the main part of the law is that the person on the ground, the worker, has the discretion to say, well, this is not a safe vehicle to operate right now, because his brakes were frozen. So I'm just wondering how in the world Gorsuch made that decision.
The other justices are wondering that, too. That's a good sign. They don't agree with Gorsuch. In fact, they recently ruled in one of the cases that was overturned. They overturned Gorsuch's ruling in a case, 8-0. So that was interesting, that there is sufficient appreciation on the court for logic in judicial rulings. So that is a glimmer of hope.
Well, I hope so, because the way things look, like, and now, you know, I'm going to fast forward that to I'm not going to say the guy's name, B.O. B.O. His initials are B.O. on Fox, okay? Making those kinds of statements, and there's a whole segment of this population that wonder why other people in the country call these folks biased and racist and, you know, a lot of names and labels, because how do they not see this? You don't ever talk about a woman, unless you go to say your hair looks nice. Don't say anything.
Now, well, you know, this is a very interesting thing, because I used to talk about it in terms of the New York Times. There is an obsession with the physical form of African Americans, and most specifically African American men. They would describe, if you read the descriptions of an Al Sharpton, for example, or you read the descriptions of Adam Clayton Powell, the word flamboyant is always cropping up. You read, you know, I listened to an interview between O'Brien and Colin Powell, in which Powell himself said, "Why are you speaking to me specifically as if I'm the only African-American? You're talking to me only from an African-American perspective." The man was at the time chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And this wuss, who probably didn't have as much education in his little finger as Colin Powell had, was presuming to talk to this man at his stature as if he was just talking to, you know, the yard boy or something. But that is a longstanding obsession with how African Americans look, the physiognomy, the way we present ourselves. And you see it all the time. You see it all the time. The hair, the comments about our form, just our physical form. So not only did he offend Maxine Waters, he offended James Brown.
Absolutely.
He said that Maxine Waters had a James Brown hairstyle, and because of that, he couldn't concentrate on what she was saying. This is a legislator at a national level.
That was over
the top. He was mesmerized by her James Brown hair.
Right. He said, oh, I couldn't process any information that was coming out of her mouth because I was just so distracted by her hair.
Yes, by her James Brown hair. He was
her James
specific.
Brown hair. Now, see, and see, here's another connection. This is not new. However, the mentally ill fascist has made it okay. And see, he's made it okay. I knew this was going to happen. He's made it okay for hate crimes. He's made it okay to speak disparagingly and be disrespectful to other people who you may not understand and not agree with.
But, you know, I understand that because the network is dedicated to a certain demographic that advertisers also wish to tap into. But I also say, where was the resistance? When all of these acts of offenses were occurring, and they were occurring very regularly, where was the reaction that shut this station down or that got him fired? There was no consequence, and the media generally understands this rule. There isn't very much in the way of retribution. There's no fear of offending blacks and Latinos because there are a few consequences to these egregious actions. You can't do these things with many other communities and get away with it. They will see to it that you run out of town. But for African Americans, repeated acts of omission and commission that are offensive, and they get away with it.
That is getting very old, and it reminds me of Allison, in that, you know, especially professional black folks, we have at least two identities because we have to navigate through the world as a Negro. But then we also have to navigate through the world as a professional. So we understand the greater culture. I was not because they're great, just because they're the power elite. Because you have to navigate through the world, but they don't understand our culture.
They don't have to.
So I can go into
the dominant culture. They do not have to understand anything. They are in charge. They have the power. And it's unilateral power. It is all-consuming power. There isn't really any countervailing force. So everybody understands that. So you
so
can do
what?
Whatever you want to do, and it would be a rare thing if people were to, you know, react with such a force that the offenders are not likely to do these things again. But they do them because they know there are no consequences. Thanks so much for calling. Great to talk with you, Khalil, today.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, that brings us to the end of our program. Very interesting. And it is important when people speak, as we say here all the time, pay attention to the various levels of meaning. They're telling you something, even when they're not conscious of it. They are telling you a whole bunch of things that you just have to stop and listen, and you will hear these things. And with this information, based on Hillary's speech yesterday, and I just played 5 minutes of it, you could expect what's next. Just like we dissected Donald Trump, there's very little that should surprise us. We understand this guy. We know this man. And so we are armed with the kind of information that should allow us to put into place our system of survival. How to avoid these people, be ahead of them, or outwit them. But they're giving us information. They're telling us. They're not hiding this stuff. They are telling us where they're going, what they're going to do next. Are we listening? And we hearing, but are we listening? And that is taking this information in at a very cognitive level. So we are not to be surprised at things that they're telling us now. They're telling us now. So yet another exercise in media literacy is very important because it's directly related to our survival, so we should pay attention. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. Tomorrow being Friday, you know what that means. It's Free Your Mind Friday, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.